Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring safe technology habits and digital well-being. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
Yeah, and I think this is such a vital topic for anyone navigating, you know, a modern career or education.
Absolutely. So to kick things off, I want you to just imagine a scenario. Imagine you're sitting at your desk, right? You're totally ready to tackle a really important project. Your smartphone is sitting right there next to you, but it is completely turned off.
Okay, good start.
Right. Better yet, it's even placed face down. You are being completely responsible. But here's the crazy part. Research actually indicates that simply having that device in your physical line of sight is measurably draining your cognitive capacity.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, your brain power is literally leaking, even when the screen is black.
Oh, sounds wild, right?
Oh. But today, we're unpacking why our brains are so intensely hardwired for this digital distraction.
Yeah.
And, you know, how we can navigate this digitally enabled future without letting it run our lives.
Exactly. And that phenomenon you just described, it's often referred to as the brain drain effect.
Brain drain, yeah.
Yeah. And it highlights a really fundamental truth about our relationship with technology. Even when we are actively trying to ignore our devices, a portion of our working memory is occupied by the conscious effort of not checking them.
Wow. So just resisting the urge takes energy.
Right. It is this continuous, low-grade cognitive load. And I want to be clear, technology is a phenomenal tool. It's designed to enhance learning, connection, productivity. That is its ultimate purpose.
For sure.
However, we are dealing with platforms that are engineered to capture human attention. So our discussion today is not about, you know, fearing those devices or retreating to a cabin in the woods.
Right. No one is saying throw your phone in a lake.
Exactly. It is about understanding the mechanisms at play so that you can reclaim your agency.
I love that. Reclaiming your agency.
Yeah.
I actually like to frame it up for you listening, like a smartphone battery, but applied to your own daily attention.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Yeah, so you wake up and you only have a 100% charge for the entire day. That's it. But it goes deeper than just a battery draining. It's also about what kind of energy you are putting into the system.
Right.
Think of your information intake like a diet. Are you feeding your brain like a protein-rich meal of deep, focused work that sustains you? Or are you snacking on the digital equivalent of junk food?
The junk food, yeah.
You know, those quick hits of social media and endless email checks that leave you feeling full but completely malnourished by noon.
I mean, the junk food metaphor is incredibly accurate, especially when we look at the underlying mechanisms of poor digital habits. It really starts with how our devices are designed.
How so?
Well, you might wonder why human willpower seems to fail so spectacularly against a simple app on a screen. It's because, mathematically, we are outmatched.
Wow. Outmatched by code.
Pretty much. The platforms we use employ a psychological principle known as variable rewards. Think of a slot machine in a casino.
Oh, yeah. They'll pull the refresh thing.
Exactly. You pull the lever, and you never know if you are going to win a jackpot or get absolutely nothing. That unpredictability causes a massive spike in dopamine.
And dopamine is the craving chemical, right?
Right. It's the neurotransmitter associated with craving and motivation. So when your phone buzzes with a notification, your brain experiences the exact same slot machine dynamic. You don't know if it's an urgent message from a boss, a funny meme from a friend, or just an automated calendar alert.
Okay, let's unpack this, because isn't technology supposed to make us more productive? How do we distinguish between, you know, working hard online and just falling into an unhealthy tech dependence?
That is the crucial question. And the answer lies in understanding digital well-being. It's the continuous maintenance of a healthy and balanced relationship with technology.
Continuous maintenance. So it's not a one and done thing.
Exactly. It's about how we use our tools, which directly dictates our stress levels. Because that intermittent reinforcement from notifications, it's what keeps us coming back.
That's right.
It is not that we lack discipline. It is that billions of dollars have been spent engineering our environments to hijack that specific dopamine loop.
And once that distraction hits, there is a massive cascade effect. I mean, it doesn't just steal 10 seconds of your time. It actively sabotages your productivity.
Yeah, this is where we see the concept of attention residue come into play.
Attention residue? What is that exactly?
So imagine you are working on a complex task. Say you're writing a detailed report or studying for an exam, and you quickly pivot your attention to check a seemingly harmless Slack message.
Just a quick glance. We all do it.
Mm-hmm. Right, but your brain has to load a completely new cognitive context for that message. And when you switch back to your report a few seconds later, your brain does not instantly snap back to full focus.
Oh, so part of your brain is still thinking about the Slack message.
Precisely. A residue of your attention remains stuck on what you just read.
Oh.
And this residue dramatically diminishes your cognitive capacity for the next 15 to 20 minutes.
Wait, 15 to 20 minutes just from one quick glance?
Yes. So if you are checking your inbox every 10 minutes, you are essentially functioning in a state of permanent cognitive impairment.
That is terrifying. So a task that should take you an hour ends up taking 3 hours. Not because the work is actually harder, but because you're constantly tripping over your own attention residue.
You're constantly resetting your brain.
And we all know what happens when a one-hour task takes 3 hours. The panic sets in. You start stressing out.
And that panic is biologically grounded. The reduced productivity directly snowballs into elevated cortisol levels. That leads to chronic stress and eventually burnout.
Because you feel like you're working constantly but getting nowhere.
Exactly. You are spending more hours working but achieving significantly less. And this heightened state of stress, it doesn't just vanish when you close your laptop.
No, it definitely doesn't.
It follows you into the evening, initiating the next phase of the cascade, which is severe sleep disruption.
Let's break down the mechanics of that sleep disruption for a second.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the anxiety and stress keeping you awake, right? It is actually the physical light coming off the screen.
That is a critical factor. The screens on our laptops and phones emit a significant amount of blue light. In the natural world, blue light is abundant during the middle of the day.
Okay, so sunshine, basically.
Right. When your eyes absorb it, it signals to your brain's suprachiasmatic nucleus, your internal master clock, that it is daytime.
Which means time to be awake.
Exactly. This actively suppresses the production of melatonin, which is the hormone responsible for signaling to your body that it is time to sleep.
So when you were lying in bed at midnight, scrolling through a feed to, quote unquote, wind down,
you are fundamentally tricking your brain into believing it is 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow. You are literally fighting your own biology at that point. And the brutal irony is that to cope with the exhaustion the next day, you lean even harder into the quick dopamine hits from the very devices that caused the problem in the first place.
Yeah, you're exhausted, so you look for a quick fix.
And you end up with a full-blown technology dependence.
It really is a self-perpetuating cycle. But, you know, the data also shows us that intercepting this cycle leads to profound benefits. When you implement healthy digital habits, the cascade actually reverses.
Oh, really? So you can undo the damage?
Absolutely. You regain your focus, your cognitive capacity expands, your stress levels regulate, and your overall well-being dramatically improves.
Which goes back to the core concept here.
Yes. Continuous maintenance of that balanced, intentional relationship with your screens.
Okay, I hear you on mindful use and continuous maintenance, but let's be real for a second. We are talking to people who are stepping into very demanding futures.
Very true.
Like, when you are a young professional working remote or a student coordinating a major group project, there is a heavy cultural expectation of constant availability.
Oh, yes. The pressure is real.
Right. Your boss or your team might expect a reply on the messaging app within 5 minutes. If I close my laptop after a task to protect my focus and avoid that attention residue, I might look like I'm slacking off.
That's the fear.
Yeah. Mm. So how does this concept of digital well-being actually survive high-pressure real-world expectations?
Well, that is the defining friction point of modern work. It is the conflict between the appearance of working and actually producing value.
The appearance of working. I love that phrasing.
Right, because corporate culture often confuses hyperconnectivity with genuine reliability. However, managing this requires proactive communication architecture.
Proactive communication architecture. Break that down for me.
It just means digital well-being in the workplace does not mean disappearing without a trace. It means setting clear boundaries and communicating them effectively. It's about telling your team, hey, I am going offline for the next 2 hours to focus on this major deliverable. If there's an absolute emergency, call my phone. You train the people around you on how to interact with your attention.
That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
You're moving from a state of reactive consumption, just answering every ping, to proactive engagement.
Exactly.
But to set those boundaries, you first have to know where your baseline is, which brings us to a highly practical exercise.
Mm.
auditing your current habits.
Yes, the audit.
The recommendation from the lesson is to track your technology use for one single day, just a 24-hour honest observation period.
And I'll warn you that single day of auditing is often a very uncomfortable mirror.
I bet.
The objective is to develop screen time awareness. You need real data on how technology is affecting your productivity and your emotional state in real time. During this tracking exercise, you are not merely looking at the total volume of hours spent on a screen. You are actively categorizing the intent behind that time.
Right. So you're looking for the difference between a productive activity, like intentionally joining a virtual lecture or researching a database, versus an unhealthy habit, like that reflexive two-hour doom scroll in bed.
Precisely. You have to categorize it.
Think about it like budgeting your finances, but with a twist. Tracking your screen time is like trying to stick to a budget while living inside a casino that knows exactly what games you like to play.
That is an excellent way to frame it.
Yeah, if you just guess where your time goes, you will always be distracted because the house always wins against human willpower. You need to actually look at the ledger.
Because the attention economy is indeed structured like a casino. To fight back, you need to externalize your discipline. Willpower depletes over the course of the day, but a structural barrier does not.
Oh, that's a great point. Structural barriers don't get tired.
Exactly. This is where practical digital tools become essential. Using a built-in tracker like Google Digital Wellbeing provides that unvarnished ledger. It reveals the uncomfortable truth about how many times you absentmindedly unlocked your phone.
And once you have the ledger, you can use tools that act like a financial lockbox. Applications like the Forest app or the Freedom app allow you to systematically block the distractions.
They do the heavy lifting for you.
Right. They cut off access to the slot machine so you can finally sit down and eat that protein-rich meal of deep work we talked about earlier.
And those tools are really just the beginning of building a larger framework for success. If we connect this to the bigger picture, we see this progression perfectly illustrated in a specific case study from the lesson.
Oh, the student case study. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, this involved a student who completely restructured their academic life. This individual was struggling with concentration and chronic fatigue. But instead of a massive, overwhelming overhaul, they implemented a few highly specific interventions.
Keep it simple.
Right. They dramatically reduced their late-night screen use to protect their melatonin production, and they established structured offline study routines.
And what happened?
The result was a measurable improvement in both sleep quality and academic performance.
It sounds so simple when you say it like that. But I mean, tools and structured routines only work if you have the internal drive to stick to them. This student actually had to enforce their own rules.
Which is exactly why this case study is so vital. This student's ability to self-regulate is the ultimate blueprint for thriving in the modern professional landscape.
Because no one is going to do it for you.
Right. We are moving into a digitally enabled future that is increasingly asynchronous, largely remote, and heavily self-directed. When you enter that environment, there is no manager physically standing over your shoulder telling you to stop looking at a social feed.
Yeah, there is no office building that locks its doors at 5 o'clock to force you to stop working. Mm-hmm. The boundaries have completely dissolved.
I really have.
I mean, your office, your entertainment center, your social life, and your school are all housed within the exact same glowing rectangle.
Precisely. In that borderless environment, creating structured routines and possessing the discipline to physically log off at night are not just nice habits. They are critical survival skills.
Survival skills.
Yeah. If you cannot regulate your technology use when you are studying or managing your own personal projects, the relentless demands of the modern, hyper-connected workplace will completely overrun your boundaries.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Setting those boundaries requires a deeper understanding of what it means to be a responsible, mindful digital citizen. We have to separate mindful technology use from mindless technology use.
Yes, that distinction is everything.
And it is not just a quantitative measure of how many hours you spend online, right? It is about the qualitative nature of your engagement.
The quality of engagement is everything. Mindful technology use ensures that the tool is serving your specific predetermined goals. It is active.
Okay, so you have a plan before you open the laptop.
Right. You open your laptop with a clear objective, you execute that objective, and you close the device. Mindless use, on the other hand, is entirely passive. It is allowing an algorithm to dictate where your attention goes next.
Just clicking whatever pops up.
Exactly. It is the reflexive opening of a new tab just because you felt a moment of boredom or frustration with your current task.
But, I mean, here is the genuine struggle for anyone listening. Mm-hmm. when our entire lives demand that we stare at these screens all day, how do we actively practice this mindfulness without getting so overwhelmed that we want to throw the laptop out the nearest window? I mean, the screen is the portal to literally everything.
The frustration is completely valid. It's a lot. The antidote, though, is cultivating somatic awareness.
Somatic awareness.
Yes. Paying attention to the physical and emotional cues your body gives you while you are interacting with technology. It is about taking yourself off autopilot in the present moment.
Okay.
For example, there is a phenomenon called screen apnea.
Screen apnea.
Yeah, where people literally hold their breath or breathe very shallowly while answering emails or scrolling through stressful feeds.
Oh my gosh, I have absolutely caught myself doing that. You realize you haven't taken a deep breath in 10 minutes just because you're clearing out your inbox.
It happens to all of us. Cultivating awareness means noticing those physiological cues. Are your shoulders tense? Is your breathing shallow? Are you feeling a spike of anxiety as you scroll?
Good. So you tune into your body.
Right. When you notice those signals, you create the space to pivot responsibly. You do not have to throw the laptop out the window. You just have to break the trance.
Break the trance. Just step away for a second.
Stand up, stretch, look out a window, or switch to an offline task for 20 minutes. Mindfulness in the digital age is simply the repeated act of noticing your state and adjusting your behavior.
Armed with that real-time awareness, it is time to build a robust toolkit of actionable strategies. These are habits you can adopt right now to protect your attention battery. First up is setting those healthy screen time boundaries we discussed earlier.
Right, making rules for yourself.
This means deciding in advance when you will be offline. It could be a rule like no emails after 8 p.m., or no phones at the dinner table.
And the key there is that the boundary is decided in advance, not in the moment when your willpower is depleted.
Right. Make the decision before you're tired.
Exactly. The second strategy is actively reducing unnecessary digital distractions.
Right.
You have to design an environment where focus is the default state, not something you have to constantly fight for.
So turning off notifications.
Yes. Turn off non-essential push notifications.
Bye.
If you are doing deep work, put your phone in another room. Make the distraction physically harder to access than the work itself.
That makes a ton of sense. And the third strategy is deliberately balancing your online and offline activities. If you have spent 8 hours staring at a screen for your classes or your job, your leisure time should engage the physical analog world.
Go touch grass, basically.
Exactly. Go for a walk without a podcast playing, read a physical book made of paper, or just have a face-to-face conversation. Give your brain a different environment to process. This actually naturally brings us to a crucial reflection question. I want you to ask yourself right now, how can I create healthier and more balanced technology habits in my daily life?
That's the big question.
Think about your typical Tuesday. Where are your friction points? Where are the moments you find yourself falling into the algorithmic casino against your own best interests?
I would strongly encourage utilizing that reflection question on a daily basis. Ask yourself every morning before you open your first application. Healthy digital habits are fundamentally a muscle.
Right. You got to train it.
You do not build a strong muscle in one day at the gym, and you do not build digital well-being with one afternoon of using a website blocker. It is built through repeatedly choosing mindful engagement over mindless consumption.
Repetition is key.
And as that muscle strengthens, it will profoundly elevate your ability to perform, learn, and thrive.
Tying all of these strategies together, the ultimate goal here is stepping confidently into a digital future. We are not trying to hide from the modern world. We are learning how to master our relationship with the tools that build it.
That mastery is the true foundation of digital confidence. The future belongs to those who possess the adaptability to leverage powerful new tools without being consumed by them.
It's all about adaptability.
Lifelong learning, which is a mandatory requirement for any future career, demands a clear, resilient, and balanced mind. You simply cannot absorb complex new information, adapt to new systems, or think critically if you are operating in a state of chronic digital burnout.
So, before we wrap up, consider this provocative thought. In a world where massive tech companies are spending billions of dollars to actively hack your attention and keep you endlessly scrolling, maybe practicing digital well-being isn't just a basic self-help strategy.
What is it, then?
Maybe reclaiming your attention is an act of modern rebellion. Think about that the next time you find yourself reaching for your phone out of pure habit.
Wow, I love that. Reclaiming your focus is arguably the most empowering choice you can make for your future self. It's a rebellion I can get behind.
With that in mind, we want to encourage you to stay curious, stay responsible, and stay future ready. Keep an eye on where you are spending that daily 100% charge. Make sure you take the time to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities, because putting these concepts into practice is where the real transformation takes place.
We also want to acknowledge the concepts and frameworks that inform this discussion, drawing from essential readings on the topic, including Digital Minimalism, Deep Work, and Irresistible.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. It has been a pleasure unpacking these strategies with you. Until next time.